Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Pluto TV is the new leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 TV channels, thousands of movies on demand, all for free. There's no credit card needed, no sign-up required. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Pluto TV is free on all your favorite devices. Download Pluto TV today.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
All right, you're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. Delighted you're with us. The left is clearly just, you know, they've made a decision that you can't just bank on recession. I mean, they, you know, we had Bill Maher say a few weeks back that he's hoping for a recession. He's praying. I think he's an atheist, but he's praying for a recession.
This economy is going pretty well. I feel like the bottom has to fall out at some point. And by the way, I'm hoping for it because I think one way you get rid of Trump is a crashing economy. So please bring on the recession.
Yeah. I've been hoping for a recession. People hate me for it, but yeah, it would get rid of Trump. So you shouldn't hate me for it.
I mean, recessions are really bad. People lose their jobs and their homes, and we shouldn't wish.
It's worth it. Well, you should wish for a recession because that will definitely get him unelected.
Okay, but Bill, you don't really want a recession.
I really do.
You're going to knock.
We have survived many recessions. We can't survive another Donald Trump term.
And others egging one on, even though we have the strongest economy in the G7. But now it's everything that happens in the United States that is not completely perfect from the left-wing perspective is because of racism. Because America was founded on racism, America grew in its commerce, obviously in its agricultural output because of slavery. The founders themselves were slave owners. And so, look, we still have a modern day slavery problem. In other words, we are slaves according to this radical perspective that's been fostering in the universities and building in the universities for decades. Now going mainstream that we are still enslaved to our racist history, our racist founding. And the New York Times is leading this charge with this thing called the 1619 Project. Newt Gingrich discusses this on Fox and Friends.
The whole project is a lie. The fact is, I saw one reference that the New York Times claims that the American Revolution was caused in part to defend slavery. That is such historically, factually false nonsense that it's embarrassing that the New York Times is doing this. But if you saw the recent leaked interview, town hall meeting with the New York Times editor, he basically said, look, we blew it on Russian collusion, didn't work. Now we're going to go to racism. That's our new model. The next 2 years will be Trump and racism. This is a tragic decline of the New York Times into a propaganda paper worthy of Pravda or Izvestia in the Soviet Union.
Newt Gingrich is 100% correct. Now, in a moment, I'm going to read you parts of the New York Times conversation on this new effort that they launched. And they defend their new, you know, project, the 1619 Project, as necessary to basically save the America that they want to create, which is more of an America that's based in socialist ideals, an America that's rejects and tosses off not just the founders, but of course, whatever came from the founders, the Constitution. They don't want this Constitution. I'm telling you, the Declaration and the Constitution, none of it works for them. So if they could, they'd rewrite it all. So it was this town hall, and it was held in response to the demotion of this editor because, you know, he suggested certain leaders and legislators may not be of the same mind as the people they claim to represent. Okay, so the Times took some grief from readers when their White House correspondent broke ranks and said perhaps doxing campaign donors was a bridge too far. I mean, can you imagine actually being a journalist saying you shouldn't publish the private information of individuals in order to harass them. So that was itself outside the mainstream for the New York Times. Well, the Times went on and corrected her story. So this was just lockstep groupthink at the New York Times, enforced by the upper management. And if you don't fall in line at the New York Times, you're out. If you don't fall in line in this new understanding of America, which is that it's racist, corrupt, Trump is obviously racist, corrupt, white supremacist, then you're out. Okay? So listen to this. This is from the account of what happened at this New York Times confab. Again, coming together after this upheaval following the demotion of one of its top editors. New York Times executive editor Dean Baquet, in his remarks, seemed to fault the complaining readers and the world for their failure to understand that the Times and its duties in the era of Trump, quote, they sometimes want us to pretend that he was not elected president, but he was elected president. And our job is to figure out why and how and to hold the administration to account. If you're independent, that's what you do. But then here's the key part of what he said. So that sounds like, okay, you know, we just have to hold people accountable if that's what they were really doing. And if that's what they really did with, let's say, Obama, which they didn't. If we're really going to be transparent as a newsroom that debates these issues among ourselves and not on Twitter, I figured I should talk to the whole newsroom and hear from the whole newsroom. We had a couple of significant missteps, and I know you're concerned about them, and I am too, but there's something larger at play here. This is a really hard story. Newsrooms haven't confronted one like this since the 1960s. It got trickier, and you couldn't really understand what he was saying at this point, went from being a story about whether the Trump campaign had colluded with Russia and obstruction of justice to being a more head-on story about the president's character. We built our newsroom to cover one story, and we did it truly well. Now we have to regroup and shift resources and emphasize a take on a different story. This one is a story about what it means to be an American in 2019. It is a story that requires deep investigation into people who peddle hatred. But it is also a story that requires imaginative use of all our muscles to write about race and class and some deeper way than we have in years. In the coming weeks, we'll be assigning some new people to politics who can offer different ways of looking at the world. We'll also ask reporters to write more deeply about the country, race, and other divisions. I really want your help in navigating this story. I'm wondering to what extent you think that the racism and white supremacy being sort of the foundation of this country should play into our reporting, one staffer asked Beckett. Just because it feels to me like it should be a starting point, you know? Like these conversations about what is racist, what isn't racist. I just feel like racism is in everything. This is a reporter for the New York Times saying this. It should be considered in our science reporting, in our culture reporting, in our national reporting. The staffer's point brought Beckett back to the paper's new initiative. One reason we signed off on the 1619 project and made it so ambitious and expansive was to teach our readers to think a little bit more like that. This is called propaganda, by the way, indoctrination. Race in the next year is going to be a huge part of that American story. And I mean race in terms of not only African Americans and their relationship with Donald Trump, but Latinos and immigration. Joining us now, Dinesh D'Souza, best-selling author, filmmaker. His latest documentary, Death of a Nation, now out on DVD, digital download. He joins us now. Dinesh, the 1619 Project is... Well, I first want you to explain their pegging it to 1619, the slave ships coming over, and why this now?
Well, I think the reason for it is that the progressive left, which has been the force behind defining our history, these people have figured out that they've had the wrong strategy all along. Their strategy has been to focus on the founding and to blame the founders for creating a union that tolerated slavery. The problem with that, of course, is that most of the founders were anti-slavery. Even the founders that had slaves were trying to figure out ways to create schemes of emancipation. Even Jefferson denounces slavery in the language of a biblical prophet. And Jefferson blames the British crown for having introduced slavery into America and preserved it for over 100 years. So remember, there's a 150-year gap between 1619 and the late 18th century when the founding occurs. So the progressives have realized the founders are actually not the right target. So they want to figure out, how do we go back further before the founding to try to blame the whole country for what happened? And so they go back to 1619, when there are a handful of slaves, a handful of indentured servants. By and large, most those groups treated about the same at that time. And they treat that original act as a kind of crime. So that's what's going on here. I call it a meta story. The meta story is the story behind the story. And the progressives are redefining their meta story because they want racism to be the foundation stone of the whole country.
And they want that because then it gets them closer to ultimately scrapping the Constitution or Declaration altogether? I mean, what are they looking ultimately to do, their long-term goal?
Politically, they're looking to demonize whites and specifically white males. And they realize that they can't just do it in terms of blacks because in part, Trump is actually very pro-black. I mean, there are black guys all over social media who you would never see in the Republican Party screaming their support for Trump. So the black thing isn't working out for the left by itself. They need to sort of promiscuously expand it. And so what they're doing now is they're trying to smuggle in all these other issues, illegal aliens and Palestine. And so the idea here is to try to mobilize all these different ethnic groups and fan the flames of hostility to the white male. And this is the basis of creating the new Democratic Party.
Adam Sewer, who's a senior editor over at The Atlantic, was on with Don Lemon, one of your favorites, Dinesh, talking about this 1619 project. Let's listen.
There is sort of an ideological nugget of truth here in that if you look back and you see the country is fundamentally shaped by this institution of slavery, its economy, its governing institutions, by this institution that existed on this continent for longer than the United States has existed, then all of a sudden you have a particular responsibility to rectify the harm that was caused by that institution. And I think that's a place that people like Mr. Newt Gingrich really don't want to go. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why there is such a backlash from this particular crowd.
Your reaction to that?
Well, I do want to go right there, and let's go right there. Here's the point. From 1619 to about 1800, slavery existed in America, but it was very peripheral to the U.S. economy. The idea that slavery was building the U.S. economy in 1619 or 1620 is preposterous. The truth of it is there was a massive spread of the plantation system in the 19th century. This came after Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin. This is the only time, from about 1800 to 1860, when slavery became a very important part, you may say the cornerstone of the Southern economy, and also important to the U.S. economy. But this was during the rise of the Democratic Party, which became the party to defend the slave system. See, this is the great elephant, or maybe I should say donkey, in the living room. That this is what the left wants to hide. They have to hide this very big ball. And the way they do that is by saying nothing about the plantation system, nothing about the cotton gin, nothing about the role of the Democratic Party, nothing talking about the Northern Democrats from Stephen Douglas to James Buchanan, who strongly protected slavery, say nothing about this,
right,
and kind of dance all the way back into the mist of 1619 and put the blame there.
Well, and isn't it also a problem, Dinesh, that we as conservatives, I mean, you've done this in your films and your books, and I've tried to do it in my books. We as conservatives don't have either the dedication to instructing new generations, teaching them the real history versus the socialist alternative history. So they're you can almost not blame young people. They're not getting this anywhere if their parents don't teach them and they're busy trying to make ends meet. I mean, or they don't know themselves. So I think it's incumbent upon this new kind of more pragmatic type of conservatism, post-Bush, more populist conservatism, to dedicate itself to instructing new generations on why immigration has to be done right, on why the evils of slavery were ultimately vanquished by extremely committed Republicans. All the other points, historical points that are now missing in this jumble today, we need to make sure young people hear the real truth. How do we do that?
Well, I think part of this is the failure and abdication of the conservative intelligentsia. A couple of years ago, I was looking to find biographies of Lyndon Johnson, because here's a man with a deeply racist history and one that continued after he supported the Civil Rights Act. So the question I was thinking about is why would an outright bigot like Johnson, and originally a segregationist, become a champion of civil rights? It's a fascinating historical question. I find about 7 progressive biographies of LBJ, not a single one on the other side. So I am now trying to ferret out LBJ's racism from progressive historians who are doing their best to dance around it, hide it, put it under the carpet. But the work hasn't been done from our side to shed a light on all this stuff so that young people can say, oh, wow, this whole other side is being left out of the New York Times. So the New York Times, in a way, is just a front man for the progressive intelligentsia. They are echoing things that have been hatched in the academy, and they are sort of the publicity arm of the left-wing scholarly departments that are putting out this stuff.
But how do, again, just going back to the question, I mean, we get that is true. It's all, this all started in the university back when we were in school at Dartmouth. We saw the beginnings of all of this in the 80s, but conservatives don't dominate the media. There's Fox and a few other websites and stuff, and OAN, I guess, but there's not a lot. So how do you win the long-term battle of education? What can we as conservatives do?
Yeah, see, part of what I'm saying is that we don't even do the original work that our media can put out. So, for example, there are lots of conservatives who are getting graduate degrees, but I'm saying instead of getting a graduate degree in Russell Kirk or Gnosticism in the 4th century, focus on LBJ. Here, this is a very important part of the left's argument, the big switch. LBJ is sort of their hero. Focus on this guy, and at least it only takes one guy to devote his graduate years to making this type of investigation, and then we can try to get the information out. But if you don't do the work, then it doesn't matter if you even have the media, because you have nothing to promulgate.
I understand. Here's Gloria Brown Marshall, professor at John Jay College, also on CNN.
This country wants to believe the concept that only hard work by Europeans created it, that they didn't steal the land from Native Americans, they didn't steal the labor to come and build this country. They didn't take the intellectual and creativity of Africans and other people. They want to make this a European story. And if they talk about slavery, they then have to make it more than a European story.
Yeah. You see
all right,
what I'm saying?
So let's look at those things. I mean, first of all, it is the Southern economy that was in fact built by slavery was also leveled after the Civil War.
Right.
So the idea that the present prosperity of the United States is due to that Southern economy makes no sense. So she's invoking a debate as if she's already won it at the outset. But the truth of it is we aren't even having that debate, and part of the reason is in the universities the progressives shut it down.
Well, again, they don't have the... I mean, I think that we conservatives have to respond and frankly, not even respond. We have to set our own narrative by, doing the hard work first. And this is where I do think the Trump administration has fallen short in not laying the groundwork for the next generation. So he gave speeches over a long period of time, did a lot of writing. Trump didn't ever really do that. So we don't have a body of work to sort of explain, you know, what Trump's philosophy is, or how the country can go forward in the era of globalization, or why it's important that we don't try to democratize the world when we're $20 trillion in debt. You know, I just feel like we need like a series of online or available tutorials on basic subjects that all students can watch whenever they want to and are encouraged to watch. I just think it's so important.
Yeah, this is a critical point. Reagan was an educational president, and if you listen to Reagan's speeches, he actually educates you about the evils of communism. His speeches in that sense have a beginning, a middle, and an end. They're rooted in the Solzhenitsyn and Friedrich Hayek. So they have a kind of intellectual base. Now, Trump doesn't actually do that. Trump's style is totally different, which is not to say that Trump has to be Reagan, but it is to say that there is a deep need for an intellectual argument well supported on the conservative side that ultimately gives the rationale for the kinds of things that Trump is saying and doing.
Right, because now, Dinesh, it's not clear who follows Trump. I mean, where's the next generation? Well, we have think tanks for years have been dominated by Bushites and neoconservatives and but they're just—I don't know what the think tanks really amounted to in the end. I mean, I'm kind of anti-think tank myself. I think it's all a big slush fund for people.
I mean, I think this is a big problem, and it's broader than the think tanks. It's a problem for the Republican Party because we'll need a post-Republican Party post-Trump.
Right.
In my view, it'll need to be a Trumpified Republican Party, and that means that the best elements of Trump need to be imported into it. Look, Trump is showing, for example, every other Republican how to fight the left and how to fight the media. He has an ability to get to their goat and drive them insane that no other Republican does. This is why they're dying for Trump to get out, because they know that they can beat Pence into a pulp. They can beat just every other Republican into a pulp, because the Republican technique is intellectual apologetics and submission. And Trump is showing a different way. So I think Trump is the way forward, but the institutions need to back up, need in a sense to be reconfigured for the Republican Party to have a future.
Yeah, well, I don't feel any better hearing that, you know, Paul Ryan's moving back to Washington. You know, that's all a setup to 2024. I mean, whether Trump wins or doesn't win, that they think they're going to recreate the whole Bush Kemp. I mean, that's just over. They don't understand this is over. It's not popular on the right. That's why Trump won, and it's not popular on the left.
I mean, just look at the rhetoric that Republicans use on social media, right? They go, the Democratic Party needs to do this, and the left must do that, and they need to recognize this, and the Democrats are better than this, and we need to bring the country together. And all this nonsense is pure. It goes absolutely nowhere. The Democrats don't need to do anything. They're not going to do anything. The only way, even with digital censorship, I mean, I see senators on social media, Google must accept its responsibilities. No, Google's not going to accept its responsibilities. You're a senator. Why are you railing about this in social media? Use your power to make them. And I think that's really what Trumpism is all about. It's the idea that the left cannot be counted on to do the right thing. They're not going to do the right thing. They have to be made to do the right thing.
Now, and you have flashpoints of hope and optimism in the African American community, I think, and it takes some brave voices to step forward. You have people like Candace Owens at that April House of Representatives hearing saying this:
white supremacy, racism, white nationalism, words that once held real meaning have now become nothing more than election strategies. Every 4 years, the black community is offered handouts and fear. Handouts and fear. Reparations and white nationalism. This is the Democrat preview. There isn't a single adult today that in good conscience would make the argument that America is a more racist or a more white nationalist society than it was when my grandfather was growing up. And yet we're hearing these terms sent around today because what they want to say is that brown people need to be scared, which seems to be the narrative that we hear every 4 years right ahead of a presidential election.
Well, of course, they'll say, look at El Paso, look at these mass shootings, look at these online postings, Dinesh. And if you in any way you try to, you know, downplay any risk of mainstreaming of white supremacy and the freaks that are in their basements tweeting or posting about it, then you're yourself a racist. That's how the argument always goes.
Now, in fairness, I think that all of this is a little bit like the Mueller inquiry in the sense that it doesn't resonate with experience. It's also, by the way, true of climate change. The left is in the position where they're saying things that are not supported by anything we experience in society. You know, the world is about to end in 12 years. Yeah, but the climate seems pretty much the same as when I was a kid. Yeah, I know, but, you know, the data shows. And so similarly with the white supremacy, we live in a society where people bend over backwards to accommodate blacks. They do their best, if you will, to show sensitivity. If anything, we have sort of gone to the other extreme in many cases. You make an accusation against a white guy, he's on the defensive. You make an accusation against a black guy, it backfires. So this is the actual society we live in. And so their narrative is contradicted by everyday experience. Even if you stop an African-American or a minority and say, listen, what's the most racist thing that happened to you in the last year? Not the last day, but the last year. Did anybody call you the N-word? Did anybody kick you down the street? Did anybody deny you a job? No. Well, you know, something really horrible happened in 1619. This is the Democrats' argument. So politically, I'm really not sure it carries the weight that they think, but it's a horrible kind of drumbeat of propaganda. They dominate the airwaves. So it's a nasty thing that they're doing, but it still may not work.
Well, Eddie Glau Jr., Princeton professor on Morning Joe, basically admitting that this whole New York Times 1619 project is really defeat Trump project.
One of the special things about the issue, it takes immediate today issues, concerns, and shows us the history, demonstrates the history, how we've gotten to this point. And Trump has unsettled the sediment at the bottom of our politics. We can't put it back.
Well, you know, so this is very revealing about both academia and the media, because, you know, for generations, Americans have thought, I turn on the news and that's what happened yesterday. You know, they're basically giving me the facts. Now we see that that's not the case. The whole media project, the whole New York Times is driven by a principle of selectivity that begins by choosing this is what we focus on and this is what we leave out. And so it's all the news that fits our ideology. It's not all the news that's fit to print. It's all the news that fits their program. And that's what they're all about. I think part of the way we defeat the power of the media is we defeat the power of the media in our own minds. Once we begin to realize that this is a rag, they have an agenda, nothing that they say should be believed, and everything is fitted into a framework, damaging facts against their side are systematically excluded, then I think we won't react to them as much. We won't give them as much importance because we've recognized them for what they are.
And also, of course, the 1619 Project doesn't even mention a lot of great African-American leaders who changed, you know, the course of our history. Douglas, of course, Tubman, Booker T. Washington. You know, none of these people are mentioned.
Well, here's Frederick Douglass. The Republican Party is the ship. All else is the sea. In other words, the Republican Party is the only way forward to protect race, to protect the integrity and dignity of the black man. This is Douglass. Now, this quotation will not appear in public discussions of Douglass. They have to, even if they mention Douglass, they have to hide that. This lifelong Republican has to be turned into a certain kind of progressive that fits the needs of the progressive moment. So this is the smuggling of history, the rewriting of facts. It's going on a massive scale. And as you say, it's going on at a time when the conservative intelligentsia is asleep and spending half of their time fighting Trump.
Dinesh D'Souza here on the Laura Ingraham podcast. Dinesh, I hope we'll see you on TV tonight or tomorrow. Thank you, as always. One of the smartest thinkers on these issues, period. And I want to thank our great sponsors here on the Laura Ingraham podcast who make this program possible free of charge to you every week, including GenuCell, ADT Home Security, Pluto TV, and Delta Animal Rescue. My friends, you know that I love animals. People say I'm an animal freak. I take that as a total compliment. Just love them, love them, love them. I think I could have been a naturalist in another life, or maybe a zookeeper, although I don't know. Maybe I am kind of a zookeeper in politics, trying to keep all the wild forces in order. But a lot of animals who are abandoned or lost or injured have nowhere to go. Well, Delta Animal Rescue is working really hard to save the lives of our furry friends who, frankly, have nowhere else to turn. And it's the largest no-kill care for life's animal sanctuary of its kind in the world. And their super sanctuary is home to more than 1,500 animals. They've all been abandoned in the wilderness. And you can help this beautiful mountaintop ranch continue its mission of compassion by doing this, including Delta Rescue in your estate plans. Know that 100% of your donations go directly to the animals of the Delta Rescue Super Sanctuary. And this is very easy to do, by the way. You just go to Delta Rescue's tax-saving estate planning options and go there at deltarescue.org/Laura. Again, deltarescue.org/Laura. And it's very easy. You'll learn more about how your estate contribution can save the lives of animals who have nowhere else to turn. DeltaRescue.org/Laura. They say that home is where the heart is. Well, the reality is that home is where all of your precious belongings are located, where your family lives. So don't you want to protect your most precious investment? So go with the nation's number one smart home security provider, ADT. They provide everything from video doorbells, indoor and outdoor cameras, smart locks and lights, all controlled from the ADT app or the sound of your voice. So peace of mind, priceless. So get a custom designed ADT home security system connected to first responders installed in your home today. Safety, security and protection are just a click away. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com.
Country, though we would like to think otherwise, was founded on racism, has persisted through racism, and is racist today. But it was only until this administration and this president that that racism was invited out into the open.
Oh my gosh, I really can't even play this Beto O'Rourke character anymore. I can't stand listening to his voice. He is a complete and utter phony and fraud, propped up by the wealthy, his wealthy in-laws and family ties. And he was frankly more compelling and with pink hair on stage doing a bad punk rock act. Joining us now is Giano Caldwell, founder and principal of Caldwell Strategic Consulting, author of Taken for Granted, How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans That Liberalism Failed. It's now available on pre-order. We're going to link that on our Facebook page. My friend Giano Caldwell. Giano, you must be just jumping out of your seat here. This is just insanity that we're hearing. We just talked to Dinesh D'Souza about the propaganda machine at the New York Times literally rewriting history and using it to smear this president and anyone who supports anything that he's ever done. And now we're off to the races for 2020, where it's off to the races and it's going to be all about race.
You know what's so disheartening for me, Laura, is the allegations of Trump being a racist. I think about the fact that more than Obama, more than George W. Bush, H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, even Ronald Reagan, to be honest, President Trump has done more for Black America than any president in our history. We can just continue to name the subject matter in his first term, that is. Especially, we can name the subject matters: the First Step Act, the reauthorization of the Second Chance Act, lowest unemployment in Black America in history, more job openings than we've ever really seen. This president is about Black America, and it's so shameful that people continue to throw around these allegations of racism. And with the New York Times trying to rewrite history, if you're going to tell the story of racism in this country, we need to tell the real story. Let's talk about Jim Crow laws. Who were they? Who were they pushed by? Democrats. Let's talk about how the Republican Party was started in 1854 in opposition to the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which wanted to expand slavery into the West. Let's talk about the fact that there was all the civil rights bill that had actually passed in this country was due to Republican support. Let's tell the real story of what's going on. Let's talk about who really pushed racism throughout this country. Let's talk about the 94 crime bill. I mean, there's so many different issues that we can really tackle and tell the real story of how conservatives have brick by brick been there as a supporter of African Americans through this country. And it's shameful that people continue to try to repaint the history of this country. But thankfully, we've got a fighter in Donald Trump who refuses to stand by while people continue to paint a picture that isn't true.
Well, Gianna, what they're going for clearly is this. Of course, it's to defeat Trump by trying to blunt any growth among minority voters for the Republican Party, which is frankly the should be the minority voters' natural home, given the history of slavery and the Republican Party standing up against slavery. But they've been twisted around in the way things have been taught, and people, I think, misunderstand or misapprehend what real history is. So the left wants to redefine that, and now they want to move to, if you're not for reparations, financial payments to people who can be connected to suffering from slavery, or some type of in-kind exchange of wealth or something, if you're not for that, you too are a racist. That is where we're going, I think.
Yeah, and it's, you know what, I write about it in my book, Taking for Granted How Conservatism Can Win Back the Americans That Liberalism Failed. This whole idea of reparations is a farce, and it's only meant to deceive Black Americans to vote for Democrats because they're scared. Honestly, I do believe that Democrats are scared. They were shocked by the results of 2016. They were shocked that President Trump received double-digit support among Black men. They were shocked that he got the number 8% among African Americans in totality. They're shocked by his results for African Americans in his first term. They're shocked that he's done more for Black Americans than President Obama ever did or ever wanted to do. They want the problems that exist in our country to continue, especially for Black Americans, to continue. Because that's how they stay in power, by dictating a fallacy about the history of this country or the history of the Republican Party and what's going on that doesn't exist. So they want to see as much division racially as possible, and they don't want anybody to see the real truth because this is how they win. They stay in power by lying to African Americans about the issues of the day, lying to African Americans about the legacy of race in this country, and lying to African Americans about the current status of race in this country.
Well, here is Pete Buttigieg, who is, again, picking up this baton that was initially passed by some of the more socialist Democrats and now being grabbed by those who claim to be more moderate.
Systemic racism has touched every part of American life, from housing to health to home ownership. If you walk into an emergency room and you are Black, your reports of pain will be taken less seriously. If you apply for a job and you are Black, you are less likely to be called just because of the name on the resume.
Incredibly pessimistic view of the country that is increasingly diverse, and young people don't even really look at race. I mean, I don't know what world he's living in, but he can't even run South Bend, Indiana, let alone thinking about him running the country.
Exactly. He's having his own issues of race, and you're trying to lead this country when you're leading a divided city along racial lines. This is the only thing that they have, Laura. They have this, and hey, let's hope that there's a recession in our country so Donald Trump can lose. They are upset the fact that Donald Trump continue to have great approval ratings. He's continued to have a base that's solidified around his economic message that's been powerful and resonating across America. They're upset that it appears that over 50% of Americans believe Donald Trump is going to win a second term. They're very disappointed by what's going on, and they have no message for the American people. And it's an issue that they're going to continue to have because, in my opinion, per what I've seen, whether it be Joe Biden or anyone else, President Donald Trump is going to trounce the competition. He's going to win a second term.
Let's talk, Gianna, about what's happening in urban America. It turns out that people trash Trump because he brings up this Elijah Cummings Baltimore fiasco the city getting worse, not better. Terrible crime, even though crime as a general matter has gone down in the country. And we had this community forum in Baltimore, first time that Cummings has done something like this in a while, about childhood trauma. And he only invites basically his pals. There were no community members there. No one.
I saw your show on this. Yeah.
That was like that kind of, that's convenient.
Yeah. And it's not surprising, too. I've seen the work of Kimberly Klasick on this issue. And I talked to her after the weekend, her videos were done that go viral. And she told me that she's been talking to city officials about the trash issue in West Baltimore for over 2 years, and she has emails to prove it. So you think about the fact that in these communities, and you know I'm from the south side of Chicago, Democrat policies have ruined them, and they've been ruining them for decades. Why? Because Democrat politicians could give a damn about the people that live in their community. What they care about is power. That's it. So long as they're going to stay in power, they can blame someone else for the deficiencies that exist in the community. They can blame everyone else why in Chicago, if you're an African-American male between the age of 20 and 24, at least in 2016, 47% of you were unemployed and out of school. They can blame somebody else for those issues that have been the most draconian of any particular city. And urban America, they want to blame somebody else. But the truth is they're disastrous policies that have led to the dilapidation of these urban communities.
Yeah, and I think, again, we've seen this in Chicago, where liberal mayor after liberal mayor after liberal city government has failed the people. And they're doing the same things that fail year after year. And really, I mean, you might have a little dip in the murder rate here and there, but still, there's just blocks and blocks and blocks of uncontrolled violence.
And not only that, you think about the fact, you know, we're having this conversation about President Trump and the gun laws and universal background checks and all that kind of stuff and comprehensive gun control laws, but I'm a living witness that comprehensive gun control laws don't work. I mean, if you don't believe me, ask the 100-plus people that were recently shot in Chicago in 1 month. I mean, it's ridiculous that people think that policies that sound good to some are going to be that their talking points and stomping ground when they have been proven not to work. So this is an unfortunate reality that facts never live on the side of Democrats. It's only fantasies in which they continue to push onto the American people, and unfortunately, you got the media that continues to prop up these lies, these lies and fallacies to the few that will listen. And it's a problem that we've had for a number of years, especially conservatives. And unfortunately, a lot of conservatives hadn't fought back against this, but now we have a fighter in the White House. Matter of fact, I call President Trump a street fighter because he's gonna at all points he's gonna fight back. So whether you consider it presidential or not, this president is going to fight back. And I'm so thankful for him because he also endorsed my book. And him and Colter Bryant killed me, Newt Gingrich, Kekos James, among others, Ben Shapiro, they've all read my book, and they also agree that President Trump is a fighter.
Do you think that the African-American vote will increase for Trump this time around? Do you think he needs to do more outreach into the inner city, certainly not be deterred from going into places that he frankly didn't campaign in last time, like Chicago?
Right. And President Trump attempted to campaign in Chicago. And if you recall, there was
threatened violence.
They took over it. And then for security reasons, he couldn't go in. I think that he absolutely needs to go into these urban areas, and he has to keep the heat up on the Democrats, because whether people know it or not, the hidden conversation in Black America is all about the fact that President Trump is right. He's correct about how the Democrats have taken advantage of our communities. They've taken advantage of our urban centers, and it's been disastrous for us. No one believes anything outside of that. They recognize the Democratic policies have been disastrous. They're looking for alternatives. Who's going to be there for us? And President Trump can lay out a framework of what he's done, not what he's proposing to do,
but what he's done for the benefit of all of Black America. And I think that's something that he has to keep the heat up. He has to go to Detroit, as he has before. He has to go to Chicago. He has to go to all these places. The Democrats, frankly, they don't welcome him. Rahm Emanuel said Donald Trump would never spend a night in Chicago,
yeah.
And that was his aim. He has to change
him.
The narrative on us, and I talk about this on Instagram all the time at Gianna Caldwell. This president is the greatest president we've seen for Black America, bar none.
Gianna Caldwell, great to talk to you, as always. And we're looking forward for your book. Comes out. You can get it on pre-order. It's called Taken for Granted. And Gianna Caldwell is just a terrific person dedicated to actually spreading the truth, not the propaganda that just keeps African-Americans upset, angry, and not advancing as they should. Let's go to Alan in California. Alan, welcome.
Good morning. I was just calling to say that, you know, originally they started out calling Trump an anti-Semite, and then he completely proved that that was absolutely not true, at which point the narrative changed and it went into being racist and white supremacist. Ironically, one of the core tenets of white supremacy is being anti-Semitic, but, you know, somehow they're not getting that disconnect. And then now we've got, you know, Omar and Tlaib and the rest of the crew up there who are rabidly anti-Semitic, but we can't get any kind of Democrats to, you know, do anything but condone their behavior. And I just don't see how there can be such a level of hypocrisy between what they're actually participating in and allowing to happen within their own party and then what they're trying to accuse everyone else of.
Well, I think what they accuse Trump of, they're doing. Anyone who follows me on Twitter, you've seen my comments in this arena. I mean, when they say Trump is a white nationalist, they're really guilty of framing everything in racial terms. Trump doesn't use racial language. And they refer to S-hole countries. If Denmark was being run poorly, he'd call that in it. I mean, it doesn't matter. He's the most colorblind person out there. He does not. He cares about results. They're obsessed with race. That's what they're the ones who are completely obsessed. And Heather McDonald wrote about this a couple days ago in the Wall Street Journal. The title of the piece was Trump Isn't the One Dividing Us by Race. Trump rarely uses racial categories in his speech or his tweets. It's the media and Democratic leaders who routinely characterize individuals and groups by race and issue race-based denunciations of large parts of American polity. Some examples. As race dominates the political conversation, 10 white Democratic candidates will take the stage. Washington Post. Mr. Trump's rally audiences are, quote, overwhelmingly white. Multiple sources. Your son's, quote, whiteness is what protects him from being shot. Kirsten Gillibrand. White candidates need to be conscious of white privilege. That's Pete Buttigieg. White supremacy manifests itself in the criminal justice, immigration, healthcare systems. Cory Booker. Michael Brown was murdered by a white police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. Elizabeth Warren. Whiteness is the very core of Mr. Trump's power, whereas his predecessors made their way to high office through the passive power of whiteness. I mean, this is just, you know, they're not going to be happy until people are tossed off their land or their possessions are taken merely because of the color of their skin. See, so they're the ones who are using race as a weapon instead of saying all people deserve equal opportunity to advance and a quality education through competition and a stronger U.S. market for exports to give more people jobs and in places from blue collar to white collar jobs. That's a non-racial way of looking at the world, treating people kindly with respect. But they don't want to do that because that doesn't serve their political ends. And we consistently have said there are bad actors in every field. There are racists. There are going to be people who are white supremacists. But is that the dominant force in American life today? No. The dominant force in American life today is people are working hard to try to support their families and maybe save for a rainy day or occasionally a vacation. That's it. The dominant force is how can I live a better life and give a better life to my family? I don't think people sitting around thinking about race 24/7.
Yeah, and I think the New York Times piece, the 1619 Project, the fact that they don't include Frederick Douglass, they don't include Harriet Tubman, they don't include Booker T. Washington, I think it tells you they just want to do that Howard Zinn's People's History kind of interpretation, where America is just a terrible country. Every single African American has suffered throughout their entire lives and owes this country nothing. Because how can you talk about the African American experience in the United States without including some of the greatest leaders? It's obviously because you don't want to talk about how great America is. You want to undermine its institutions to try to change America. Like Obama said, fundamentally transform America.
That's been the goal all along. When they say form a more perfect union, what they really mean is upend American history and remake America. We're all for making America better. That's what Trump's whole slogan was. And it better and better and better, greater and greater and greater. But that's fine. We all want that. And that means things are going to change. Things aren't always going to stay the same. But our history, our founding, the bravery and courage of our early political leaders giving up everything for their freedom. How many of these people would give up everything, sacrifice their blood and their treasure for this country today? We have a very small segment of the population serve in uniform. I respect them. I give them props, kudos. They deserve all that they get from us because we rely on them to keep us safe today instead of having them villainized and demonized day after day. But I think this, I don't know. I said this before. I think the cynical, pessimistic view of the world, I don't think that wins elections. That's why I think Trump has to be the happy warrior, not swing at every pitch, not respond to every hit. I've said this so many times, it's boring, I'm sure, for some of you to hear, but he doesn't need to swing at every pitch. His policies are working. The global economy is in some trouble. America's economy is the best of all. And globalization is something we're confronting pragmatically as Germany and all these other countries stick their heads in the sand. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast. I want to thank all of our sponsors who made this show possible: Genucel, ADT Home Security, Pluto TV, and Delta Animal Rescue. We love you all, and we love all you listeners. Make sure to always stay on top of what we're talking about day after day. Follow me on Twitter and on Facebook, at Ingraham Angle on Twitter, and our Facebook page. And, of course, you can email us at ingram.podcast@gmail.com. That's ingram.podcast@gmail.com. We always want to hear from you, and we'll maybe even get you on the line. So we'd love to have calls from you and know what's on your mind. We'll tell you what's on ours. And remember, America now and forever, here on the Laura Ingraham Podcast. See you next time.